greetings,
Hello.
sir.
It works.
I had that thing happen where Skype wasn't routing the audio to my headphones, so figured I'd just fix it before I answered instead of scrambling while I was already on the call.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah,
Oh, we're
minor
having
ones.
technical difficulties on the feed, at least with the iTunes thing. It's
Oh
like
yeah, I saw your tweet
not
about that.
refreshing, but it is like you can manually add the feed and it refreshes, but the old, like, just to subscribe, it doesn't work.
Huh.
It stopped about last Sunday.
I mean, a good geek brunch should always be refreshing, you know?
Yep, it should.
But
Spotify's
yeah.
working.
Interesting. Strange.
Yeah, so I'm just telling people to go to add it manually. You can type in the URL and then type slash feed and it'll subscribe and it'll work. But for whatever reason, I contacted Derek because I don't even have the credentials to log in to the iTunes to check it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's going on. But other than that, it was good. Somebody contacted me, said I can't get to your shows, and I'm like, huh. I never listen to my own shows to check it.
Yeah. I started using a while back I switched from the iTunes app on my phone to an app called Overcast,
Yeah.
and I'm not sure where they pull their feeds from, but it seems to be working on there. Like I have,
Can you get Geek Brunch on there?
yeah, I have Geek Brunch subscribed on here, and I'm showing Geek Brunch 370 from yesterday, and
Yeah.
and then a test you did of reposting the weekly reads. So it seems up to date.
Yeah, I tried a lot of things because everybody was like, couldn't get the weekly reads. So I was like, okay, I'll force another one and see if it shows up. But none of those last three were queuing up. It was just the last one that came out was the retro with Rob.
Yeah, try out Overcast or something else, people.
Yeah.
Of course, they won't be hearing this if they.
That's the problem, is it's hard to get the word out.
Yeah,
Even on
if they're.
Twitter, like three people might read my note,
Yeah, I guess not everybody's going to be. Some people just listen to a podcast. They don't follow everybody on social media and
Yeah.
that kind of thing, but oh well. Fixable problems, I
Yeah.
guess, ultimately.
Well, hopefully it'll fix itself, or Derek will. I almost w I want to ask him if he could just like refresh the feed, like drop it, drop the URL and then add it back in, and then submit it and see if it opens up again. Or I don't know how things get clogged in the RSS world, but it seems like that's what's happening.
My name is Earl.
Yeah. I was reading some manga before you called.
Wow.
I'm reading Chainsaw Man.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that. I've heard Joe talk about that. Iowa's Joe.
Yeah, I've been real intrigued by the covers. And so far it's pretty good. It's about a broke demon hunter. I guess his father was a demon hunter before him. And when his father died, he got all the debts. So he's just trying to get by. And he's got this little, like, it looks like a Pikachu chainsaw demon that he attaches to his arm and kills demons with it. And then the Yakuza is sort of killing him. So it's very strange, but it's pretty interesting.
Times are tough for demon hunters, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of manga is related about demon hunters. At
Yeah.
least when I was going through the aisles yesterday
Right now,
at the
that's the
Barnes
big
and
thing,
Noble,
yeah.
you know. It was
Especially like the shonen manga that's aimed, at like a similar audience to like American superheroes.
Yeah.
It tends to go through phases. And demons and like supernatural seems to be really big. Like whereas, like back a couple decades ago, it was all about like martial arts with like Naruto and Dragon Ball Z and
Yeah.
stuff like that. Seems like it goes through kind of trends.
I tend to like the shock horror stuff. That's the stuff I like in manga.
Yeah, it's an interesting, different kind of. It goes through trends, but also like manga in general is definitely more diverse in Japan.
Yeah. They are big here though, because I didn't realize like Barnes and Noble, like they only have like one row of graphic novels, and then they have like four rows of manga, like
Oh, yeah.
entire rows. And even when I was there, 'cause I hadn't been to a Barnes and Noble in, God, it's been at least 5 years. And yesterday we went out to eat, and we were like, let's go walk, you know, just walk around for a while. And then there was a Barnes and Noble there, so we just walked around, and I was like, oh, I'll get something to support. And I was like, yeah, this Chainsaw Man has always intrigued me. And I could never find one because they started selling like manga at Target too. Like you could go to Target, but you can't find a number one to. And even there, even at Barnes and Noble, I saw like two through whatever, six or nine or whatever they were at. But I couldn't find number one, and I found number one like on a separate. So they had those four rows of manga, and there was no number ones. But then I saw a table of manga, and it was on the table. So I said it was destiny that I get it because there's a number one. And I don't think like manga, at least from what I've read, you can just jump in. Like it's almost like you have to start at the beginning. At least when I've read multiple volumes, it's like you don't get any kind of recap or anything, or it just continues.
Yeah.
It's a serial.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think some have at some times tried to have like a recap page or certain publishers maybe use them, but I haven't seen a lot of those. But yeah. So no Rob today. He's off bouncing on jumpalines.
Yeah, he was missing in action twice last week too. But I wasn't able to record last week. What I was hoping, because I'm gonna take another vacation, is I was hoping that you two could record. Because usually I have like, I don't know, like two podcasts like stocked up. So
Yeah.
it looks like I'm going weekly at least. But now I'm like out. I have nothing. And I'm going on another trip this coming week, so I'll not be able to record anymore. So I was hoping that you guys could record last week, but at least I can record this week, so we'll have something to release.
Yeah. Yep. Gotta celebrate those kids' birthdays.
Yes, I thought they did that the week before, though.
I guess that must have been the family party.
Oh.
I'm guessing. And then they have the friends party, maybe.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I know I've come across that with other kids' birthdays. People doing that.
Yeah. My nephew's done that, I think.
Yeah.
But his happened in COVID time, so I think it was just the one. But before that, they used to have like a family get together and then go somewhere and meet friends,
Yeah.
usually on the same weekend.
Yeah, we don't really know because we're dinks. I
Yep.
found out dual income, no kids.
Oh, that's what it
I didn't
stands
know
for.
that. Yeah, I didn't know that was a term.
Dinks.
My wife saw it in a magazine the other day.
Oh,
So
cool.
apparently we're dinks.
We're dinks.
We're dinks. Dinky dinks. Rinky dinks.
Doesn't sound like a good term.
It doesn't really, no.
I mean, it makes sense. The acronym makes sense, but
Yeah.
the term does. It sounds not like a good flavor of acronym.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like well, it sounds derogatory.
Yeah.
But
Probably was meant to be, pending the magazine.
maybe, yeah. Can't remember where it was, but maybe just jealous of that extra disposable money. Kids are expensive.
Oh, yeah. And then you have to make those tough decisions, like, is a child care worth it? Because child care is so expensive. So, like, if you wanted to do a dual income or just somebody just stay home,
Right,
you have
yeah.
to make those decisions. Is it
Yeah.
beneficial or. Yeah. So, what did you bring to the table today?
Well, I think you might be pleased to hear that I ended up breeding a bunch of spawn.
Oh, great.
As I tend to do, I was flipping through Hoopla, seeing what had been added. I didn't end up going with really anything that was recent, but I was reminded that last. So I remember, like, maybe the last episode I was on, or sometime recently, you asked me if I tended to, continue on and continue to read stuff that I talk about on the
Yeah.
show. And, like, for the last few years, I tend to, I don't read comics all year long. But I tend to, at least so far, every year, I at least go through a period of time where I read them pretty regularly. And I think the last few years it's been like in the summer. I have no idea why, because I don't plan that or anything like that. But last year, one of the things I was reading was some early Image stuff, and I read the first 12 issues of Spawn, which, I've talked about before how when I was a kid, all my favorite artists were the ones that broke off and formed Image, and I followed as much as I could afford, as a, as a young kid. A lot of the early issues of Image, but it wasn't too long after Image started that I lost interest in comics for a while. So last year when I read some of the early issues of Spawn, it was the first time I was rereading those since I was a kid, I think. And it was all the purely McFarlane stuff. It was before he had any of the guest writers on, so which was really early on he started doing
Yeah,
that.
guest writers and guest artists.
Yeah, yeah.
Capullo, Angel Medina. I mean, he had a slew of artists that
Yeah.
mimicked his style, and he's even had artists that don't mimic his style that are like dramatically different.
Right. Yeah, actually, the stuff that I read today, I read all the stuff leading up to I read through the issue before Greg Capullo's first issue, as it turned out. I didn't realize, I obviously knew Capullo did a lot of Spawn, but I didn't realize it was that early that he did his first issue. But last year, I read up through 12, which included he had Frank Miller and the famous what ended up becoming a famous legal battle with the Neil Gaiman contribution and stuff like that. I read that stuff last year, so I kind of just decided to pick up where I left off. But I saw that 13 was the second part of a story, so I reread 12. So I'll talk about 12 and 13 together. But this is kind of this storyline is called Flashback Part 1 and 2, and it's kind of our first real strong further development of Spawn's backstory, or more specifically Al Simmons, the Spawn, his backstory and how he ended up where he's at. It definitely deals a lot with his past. We get a little bit more detail filled in about his life with Wanda Blake and how they met and got married, and we meet her grandmother. They have an exchange at their wedding, where she's commenting on the fact that Wanda's not taking his last name and she doesn't understand that and that kind of thing. And just how and how Terry was, who is now Wanda's husband because Al's dead, was his best man. And they both served the government together. Terry Fitzgerald is full name. There's a background there of involvement with the CIA, and them kind of putting some pressure on Terry to not, to not dissolve, not to divulge any of the secrets that he's privy to, and an increasing concern about, how what he might do as Wanda's current husband, and the grief that she feels from having lost her previous husband and stuff. But Al gets some, there's kind of some emotional progression for him and his circumstances, because he goes and meets with her, Wanda's grandmother, and he kind of tries to hide his appearance from her and stuff, but he goes to tell her that basically she was right, that there is an afterlife, and that she's going to go to heaven. And he tries to say that she thinks, he's come back as an angel, and he tries to say, no, I'm coming from the other place. And she won't hear that. She's said, if you're here for that purpose. But the really the probably the most impactful thing for him is that he makes some kind of comment, or he just asks her if Wanda still thinks about him, and she says, heaven's sake, and tells her, tells him, she's got more love for him than ever, and she misses him more than ever, and he gave her a lot of happiness. And so I think that probably kind of helps him deal with a little bit of the struggle that he's had, and seeing that She's remarried and moved on, and wondering, you know, what kind of impact he really had on her life and stuff. But I like that we also have kind of like a little, you know, we check in a little subplot throughout these issues with Sam and Twitch, tying back to an earlier issue where there was a serial killer with the ice cream truck, and
Kincaid.
yeah, he ended up dead, and they're it's kind of bureaucratic, but they're being you know, they're waiting to be cleared in Kincaid's death, going back to issue 5 it is, and in the meantime they really can't, you know, they're frustrated because they can't do the work that they want to do, and there's a funny sequence where, you know, in these days Spawn's hanging out with the homeless, and they're talking about Jurassic, the Jurassic Park movie that's out, and talking about one of the guys. It says, "To heck with Jurassic Park. Have you guys ever smelled his Jurassic farts? Smells like they're 70 million years old or something."
Is that's Todd McFarlane probably.
Yeah.
That's just his wit. You
Yeah,
could
his
tell.
sense of humor.
I've really gotten to learn a lot about him because of his interviews and the way he is and the way he writes. Like, he doesn't always write Spawn.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes he scripts it, sometimes he actually writes the dialogue, like he's doing Gunslinger Spawn now, and he currently has another writer writing the Spawn proper, and then Sean Lewis is writing King Spawn and the other one I can't forget, Scorched.
Oh, okay.
But they're coming out regularly. Like, it's like you get a Spawn book every week because there's four of them.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some jokes here too about like Flintstones and like Bedrock and Bad Rock from Youngblood. It feels like maybe Todd taking some like little digs at Mc or at Lee Field, you know,
Yeah.
just jokingly at this
Yeah.
point.
Well,
But there's an
they're tied together through Chapel. Like
yeah, that's what
he
this
yeah.
story is about, actually. Where it goes, actually. 'Cause there's an incident with Spawn's mask he's not wearing at the time. One of the other guys grabs it and starts goofing off with it, and it has a mind of its own and starts suffocating him. And all of a sudden, he has a flashback and remembers who it was that killed him, and who his killer was employed by. And issue 12 ends with him with a splash page of Chapel, and Spawn screaming as he remembers that that's who killed him. So we go into issue 13, and it actually starts in Youngblood headquarters, with you know, Bad Rock's trying to play a video game and breaks another like handheld video game because of his body, and Shaft, and Chapel, and what's the Deadpool looking guy's name? War something, or
War, the Deadpool looking? I don't remember.
he's like blue and white costume. I think they say it later. But anyway, Spawn breaks in to Youngblood. Like, while this is all going on, you have like his narrative about like what he's observing and stuff, and you know, he has limited power, and he uses a bit of it to disappear He warps him and Chapel away from Youngblood headquarters. Die Hard, that's the guy's name. That kind of reminds me of Deadpool, Die Hard.
Yeah, that threw me off because he doesn't remind. He reminds me. He's more of a Iron Man, I thought, type.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has the iron, the armor.
I didn't think it was armor. It looks like, yeah, but I don't know. I'm not, I haven't revisited Youngblood in a long time. yeah, but Die Hard. Costume-wise, I don't know. Something reminds me of that, but. So there's, we check in with Terry and Wanda. Things are escalating with the threats to Terry from the government, and we get Sam and Twitch a page of them. But Spawn warped himself and Chapel to Botswana, and reason being that's where Chapel killed him. And it takes a while before Chapel understands who he's facing. Spawn says a lot of stuff, but none of it really gets through. He takes off his mask to show him, what he looks like now. None of it really clicks for him until he calls him the Don Juan of killers. And that was something that Chapel was always, going from woman to woman and stuff. And that was something that Al had called him back then. So then we actually get in Chapel's head where he remembers when he was assigned to kill Al, and when he did it, and shot him. And we get like the news anchor heads from when that occurred and when Al Simmons' death was reported, how it wasn't, obviously wasn't going to be reported as, the U.S. government killing him, so they fight for a while, and the way it ends up resolving is Spawn doesn't kill him, but he wants to like even out kind of he wants to put Chapel in the same place as like being alive but experiencing a feeling of loss. And we don't see it right away what he does. We just know that he puts his hand over Chapel's face, then reactivates Chapel's tracking device so that Youngblood can then track him down, which they do 8 hours later. And the issue ends with a splash page close up of Chapel's face, and we see that his face has been permanently branded with the skull, basically making him probably much less of an appealing looking man. That's the end of the issue. It was nice, two issue story that at this point, there's a lot of questions about Al Simmons' background, what happened to him, and the issues in between have been building up a lot of the like mythos of the Spawn, but it was neat to see how much they were able to flesh out details about Al Simmons.
So, art aside, story-wise, it was pretty good in terms of threading stuff and
Yeah, I thought
dialogue.
so. Yeah. I don't
Yeah,
people
I
they
just
don't
wanted your opinion because I was just listening to the Peter David versus Todd McFarlane thing, where Todd McFarlane pretty much got whipped by Peter David, but. I don't think he knew how serious Peter David was going to take it Like he th I think he thought it was going to be a more of a, you know, convention fun thing, and it wasn't.
It's weird, I
Because he was condemning Image in general at the time in the like his But I Digress article in the Comic Resources or whatever it was. He was blasting him on timeliness, but if I remember correctly, Spawn was definitely the most timely of all of them.
Yeah, I
Like
think that's right. Yeah.
even Wildcats and like all of the guys. I think Eric Larson became that, but he did a 3-issue Savage Dragon before he cut over into the ongoing. Because
Right.
I think Eric was a little more apprehensive. Like he didn't want he was more conservative. Like, I want to go back to Marvel and do X if this doesn't pan out. And then it did pan out where they did really well, and then he's like, okay, I'll launch it as an ongoing. But I just remember, like, I love the Youngblood stuff and stuff just because it was exciting. But like story wise, I thought Spawn and Wildcats were a lot more. Even Shadowhawk was a lot more sophisticated, you know, like in types of storytelling than Youngblood. Youngblood was a lot of more. Rob's influenced a lot by manga, and I could see that because his layouts and stuff, they're he wants to tell the story more through art than dialogue for sure. And manga, at least the manga I've experienced, you can read a manga pretty damn fast. Like just the way it's laid out in the books. I've never read a Shonen Jump, so I can't compare it because that's a bigger magazine. But I know these little volumes, I don't know what you call them in particular. It seems to be the norm for the format for manga. Even the size seems to be the norm. Like the majority of them are like each volume is, I don't know how many pages, but they all seem to be about the same, you know, length.
Yeah, well, they're collections. I mean, Shonen Jump is just a magazine that's like an anthology.
Yeah,
And
but
then
it's
the
bigger
collections.
format. Like it's a bigger magazine. Yeah, so I don't know like if they shrink the panels and it makes it look like there's less story or I don't. It kind of, that's why I think like Rob's stuff is more like dynamic, cause I think you see a lot of dynamic stuff in manga. But and then I always think of McFarlane's stuff as like super hyper detailed line. Like there's just a lot of expressionism in it, and the faces, like you could see all the wrinkles, like when he draws Sam and Twitch, and you can see all the like little knots in their face and stuff like that. And then like the chains, all the details and on the costume, you know, are like right in your face. And then his layouts are good, and then he does like a lot of focusing on the head or the lips or the like the fist or you know like he'll just have like a panel with that teeth, you know. So yeah, I love the Image creators. I don't know, I become obsessed with them. But a matter of fact, I'm still tracking down stuff that to complete everything that all of the initial guys have done.
Yeah, do you look at that official Image timeline that came out?
No, I haven't looked at it yet, but I've looked at the wiki page on each one of them, and it's fairly good.
It was just I saw it on Hoopla, and Jim Valentino mostly did it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be coming out. Like, I think I just haven't gotten my order yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
like a
it's all right.
celebration.
It's I thought it would have more, like Valentino says at the beginning, that like from the start he was saving everything because he felt like it was image was going to last and it was going to be a historic thing.
Yeah.
So I thought it would have a bit more of like memorabilia and photographs and stuff like that, but like a really significant portion of it is just covers, comic covers.
Yeah.
Which was a little disappointing. There's some fun stuff in there, like some fun photographs and stuff. Like they were I won't mention that much, but early on, like the first year of Image, they had like that Chicago Comic Con in 1992, where they had all the guys in like their own tent, I thought I was speaking of Todd McFarlane and farting. Valentino notes that during breaks he was teaching Valentino's two sons, who were 5 and 7 at the time, how to make farting noises into a live microphone. So I thought that was amusing. But you know, there's some fun photographs mixed in, all the guys at Rob's wedding and stuff like that. And then in the back, there's a whole bunch of photographs and stuff, but I thought it would be a little less like comic book covers and a little more memorabilia.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I recently got the Overstreet Lost Universes and I was kind of disappointed for the same reason. It's mostly covers and like it has articles like about the dead. This is like the dead universes of comics, like continuity and cross gen, and it's mostly covers.
Yeah.
And I was hoping for like more meat on the bone.
Yeah.
Like Future Comics, like that's the one that tried to do their own publishing thing, and there's only like one page of text on them. And I was hoping for more. And then I found missing books. Like, if you were to use this as, like, I wanted it to be like a complete thing. So I could even use it as a checklist to say, oh, yeah, I got all this. But I found missing books in there. So it's like, it's not really even complete. So I was kind of disappointed with it. I mean,
yeah.
It's a great, great book, but, and I'm glad I have it, but I just wanted a little bit more. Matter of fact, I had just picked up a book that had Al Simmons and Chappell in it. It was called Operation Night Strike from Extreme Studios.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Had Al Simmons, Dutch, Battlestone, and Cabot. And this was like their, I don't know if you knew, Wildstorm had like this prequel to their heroes, like Grifter and all those guys. They were in a team called Team 7. Well, this was Extreme Studios' version of Team 7.
Okay.
Before they were costumed.
You know what? I actually like only knew about Team 7 when they, when DC ended up doing a new one, and I was like, "Oh, this actually was something that existed before."
Yeah. So Extreme Studios had its own version, and Al Simmons was on that team. So that was pretty cool. But what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to go into Wildstorm and talk about DEF CON 4. So this is a book that I missed when it came out, and I just found out about it. It's got a cool ad on the back for Playmates Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toys with it's called Jim Lee's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with Eric Larson's Savage Dragon. So it had like the turtles in Jim Lee's design looked really sort of strange. They're like in superhero costumes kind of thing. And then Eric Larson had in this line, I own the She-Dragon and the Dragon, but there's a cop dragon, and then there's one with his shirt ripped open, and then there's a barbaric. But those are pretty cool toys. DEF CON 4... It says it was an experiment because it was, Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee wanted They originally were going with Malibu Comics as their distributor and using colorists just like Marvel and DC were using. And they were getting into digital coloring, but the two studios at one point decided to do their own computer coloring. And I think this is one of the experiments where they were using their, digital coloring at the Wildstorm side, and Extreme Studios was doing a very similar thing. But this was written by Matt Boone. I remember him writing for Wildstorm in Grifter, I think, and in Backlash. And the art is by Jeff Marionette, who I also think was doing Backlash. He's a really good artist. And then inks by Edwin Rosal. This story is pretty neat, and I actually thought it was a one shot, but I'm glad it's not, 'cause it's pretty damn interesting. There's this guy, I think his name is Prodigy, and he has a group of heroes in the future that have to go back into the past, and
We used to get our internet through him before we switched to America
Prodigy,
Online.
that's right. I think that's what I had too, Prodigy, and then AOL.
Yep. Prodigy.
The 14.4 modems, and before that, the 9 something, I can't remember.
Yeah.
The, let me see if I can remember these guys' names. Rika's a female. she seems like more interested in sex than war. She's very sexy as a character. And then there's a Dano, who's a tortured artist, has the ability to find the rusty lining in every little silver cloud, and he's an angry dude. Then there's Miko, who's a 15-year-old girl who's been sheltered her whole life because she's the daughter of a warlord. And then Jaden, he's a university professor who looks like the Hulk. He's like a huge guy. And these guys are sort of warriors in the future, and they're sent into the past to stop the cataclysm that actually happened. So I think they're sent back to 2051, but the comic book starts in the year 2200, where they're battling a bunch of looks like armored droids in the future. The one guy is kind of looks like Wolverine because he's got these weird fingers, and but they like hyperextend into blades, the actual fingertips. And the other guy just looks like a Hulk, and the two women just look like they're gun, they have guns and they're acrobatic and good fighters. But it starts off in the future, and they're fighting the droids, and then that Prodigy guy, he says kind of awake, and he awakes something in their brain, which sends them back to the year 2151. And the art panels are just they're amazing. There's a scene in here where they all wake up out of bed at like they're waking up out of a nightmare. Excuse me. And it gives some backstory on some of the characters as well, like the art guy and the one girl that she always likes to have sex with this like draw. I don't know what it is. It's like a hologram. It's computerized, and she's in the bed, and she after she had her orgasm, she's like, "Save that program, Data Bank. I'd like to see him again." So it's like it's very weird. And then they sort of reunite, and they're supposed to prevent like an apocalypse. And I wish I had the rest of the issues because I would have just finished reading them right there. And then it flashes forward again to the year 2200, and it kind of shows how bad the situation is. So they're sort of sent back in time to prevent the cataclysm, if you will. But it's really, Interesting story. The other thing that was interesting is like the credits you don't see until the very end, and it's in a very strange format. It's like in the letters page where you see the credits, and even the indice that you usually see in the front page, that's on the like on that same page. And then there's a map of the city, which is really cool. It's really well done. And then it gives you a breakdown of all the characters and then what's going to happen in the next issue. But at this time, Wildstorm was punching out a bunch of books. Like they had Gen 13 Ordinary Heroes, which was done by Adam Hughes. They had Union. Wildcats was on 27. Backlash, Black Ops, Cybernary, Deathblow, Grifter, Spawn Wildcats, Stormwatch, Strike Back, Team 7, Team 7-3, because they had a bunch of series of those. Wetworks, because I guess the Wils Portacio was publishing his stuff through Wildstorm. And they had like a card game expansion set. Like it's even advertised in the inside cover. It's called the Wildstorms Collective Card Game, which looks like magic cards.
Yeah, it's like everybody was trying to do collectible cards
Yeah.
once Magic caught on. Yeah, I never heard of this series. Looks like it's a 4-issue series.
Yeah, and it's got a Wizard 0.5 too, I think. So I'm gonna try to seek out. They're not expensive, at least not
Yeah, I've never
now.
heard of the
Till they
creators
listen to
either.
this podcast, and then everybody wants a copy. No.
Yeah, it's gonna be on the hot list next
Yeah, the
week.
hot list. Yeah, it has a Jim Lee cover on it too,
Yeah, I
so.
saw that. It looks like Umberto Ramos did some covers too, maybe.
Yeah, and then it's got the insides look a lot like J. Scott Campbell. It kind of has
Yeah, I
a
guess
like
the
a gen
styles.
yeah gen a Gen 13 look to it, you know. Very similar to Gen 13, which also
Yeah,
came out of the
kinda
studio.
like looking at the cover of issue one, has like the four characters on it.
Yeah.
I kinda got especially the redheaded
Yeah, she's
character.
the one that likes to have sex with the holograms.
Yeah, getting kind of a gen, but yeah, all Gen 13 feel kind of from
Yeah.
it. That's cool. Interesting. Well, I read some more Spawn. Not to,
It's an image fest.
yeah, not to, be not for a lack of variety here, but fairly different story though, in another two-part story in issues 14 and 15. Like I said, it was with issue 16 that started a Grant Morrison and Greg Capullo story actually, but which I'm kind of intrigued to check out to see how that feels. But issue 14 and 15, this is a story called Myths, and this is bringing, so now kind of going back more to the Spawn with mythology, and some humor here too, because it, as the cover issue 14 indicates, we're bringing the Violator back in, and he's stuck in his short little old fat man body, and he's got three young kids, look like a little rough around the edges, and he's trying to get them to listen to a story of his, and then they're not too interested, and they don't really believe anything he has to say. Finally, they're about to leave, and he throws a bunch of money at them, so that they'll stick around and listen. And It's entertaining throughout because he juxtaposes the it's that old trick, you have the narrator in comics where you have the narrator say one thing and the images tell a different story. And that's used to the max here because this is like old medieval Spawn, which it's a really cool design the way that McFarlane sort of incorporated like medieval armor look into the Spawn costume. But the Violator refers to him as an evil wizard, and throughout the story paints himself as the hero, and the kids don't believe for a second that this little old guy did the stuff that he said that he did. But he paints himself as a hero. Meanwhile, we see the him in his true demon form ravaging these villages and as he's known to do by this point, ripping people's hearts out and eating them. Talking about how Spawn's mother was a witch, and where in fact it doesn't seem to have been his mother at all, but a young woman who just didn't have any supernatural ability whatsoever or anything like that. There's some amusing moments where he, describes battles as if he, it was this fight to the death, and we see instead that he's just like being kicked by Spawn's horse's rear legs in the ass, and things like that, which are funny. But throughout, we also mix in some of the subplots that have been continuing on as well. Chiefly, like we do break away from, instead of it just being like an entirely focused on just looking back at the past, through the Violator's eyes, we do check in with Sam and Twitch again, and they've finally been to see that they've finally been cleared in the death of Billy Kincaid. And I'm gonna sneeze, I think, in a second here. Maybe false. It's like you feel it coming, and you're like trying to avoid it. But Sam, so they're now that they're cleared, they can go out and they want to find Spawn. They witnessed him, and they've been chomping at the bit to get out there and look for him, and so they take off. And but with Twitch mentioning that Sam has a donut squished on his butt as he gets up from his chair, and we check in with current day Spawn, just kind of reflecting on what happened. And these two bits intersect where Sam and Twitch find go out to the homeless and are asking them questions about Spawn, and they get a brief glimpse of his red cloak around the corner, only to find that he's gone when they run around into the alleyway. But the issue ends with the Violator in the past. He shoots a flame out of his mouth, and it seems to scorch Spawn. He goes over and opens up the armor and thinks that he's completely disintegrated, Spawn. But in the next issue, we see that that's not the case. He jumped out of spawn, the this old spawn jumped out of his armor, and reappears in kind of a double page splash, just in his ravaged body, just like L. Simmons. You know, the spawn has kind of a similar appearance to his real body, and the fight continues. And what's kind of key about that, though, is that while they battle the woman who the Violator is calling Spawn's mother, is actually a woman that is acquainted with this medieval Spawn, but only has only ever seen him in his armor, and so we see kind of adding to that Spawn mythos that it's not just L. Simmons who has like this connection with love for a woman in this like kind of at this point now unrequited and this kind of weakness of sorts. He after he overcomes the Violator, he, you know, he's very articulate, in contrast to his appearance, but he attempts to talk to this woman and you know, tell her that he means her no harm and et cetera, and but she's just terrified of him to the same extent that she is really of the Violator, and screams for help and runs away, and he's just quietly begging her not to do this to him. So we see kind of a parallel with the current day Spawn and his circumstances, and but yeah, not surprisingly, the Violator, you know, the kids, when he's done with the story, the kids are not impressed with anything he had to say, and take off. But as they're leaving, a newspaper flies into his face, and he reads about earlier on in the Violator's earlier appearance, he had killed a bunch of mafia figures, and part of the reason that he's in the circumstances that he's in now and stuck in this body is because the devil was displeased with the job that he did in instigating Spawn. You know, he went, and his method of doing that was to go around and kill a bunch of mob people, and it really didn't have the effect that he expected it to, and that's why he was punished. But he reads in the paper that it's being blamed on like a renegade superhero. That's what the speculation is, and so he's pissed that someone else is getting credit for the work that he did. What's interesting about that is there's a editor's note that tells you that this actually leads into the Violator miniseries that's supposed to be coming out. But there's a few pages of exchange where Al Simmons is just trying to kind of like rest in an alleyway somewhere, and some guy comes out. Like the back of a restaurant or something like that, and he gets rough with them, and Spawn's just trying to like he's telling him he'll leave and he's not gonna, you know, make a big deal out of it and everything like that. He tries to avoid fighting and stuff. He's like, it's not worth the kind of situation, but eventually he has enough and scares the crap out of the guy. And so, you know, he's like, he kind of ends the issue in a state where he's just sick of dealing with it. And so he's like, I'm just going to put out the signal long and loud that this is Spawn territory. And the final page of the issue, kind of different, like the last several issues ended up on splash pages with like, a surprising like appearance of a character or something like that. This issue ends with several panel page, and it's checking in on that subplot with Terry and Wanda, where Wanda's sleeping and Terry's gotten a late night phone call that's basically letting him know that they're currently watching him right now. Like they comment on Wanda's nightgown and basically like continuing the pressure on him, and then it tells you that the next issue is going to feature Grant Morrison and Greg Capullo. So yeah, some I like the way kind of these two stories kind of juxtapose each other. They sort of focus on different aspects of the Spawn situation, Al Simmons, and I like the way that he's kind of leaning on traditional sequential comics, and with like the subplots and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
But yeah, I
So.
mean, I'm intrigued to see where, how it kind of feels with he had like different writers come on, still did the art and stuff like that, but I'm curious to see how it feels to have Grant Morrison writing and Greg Capullo doing the art.
Yeah, and Violator was an Alan Moore book drawn
Oh,
by Bart Sears.
that miniseries?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And he also did Violator versus Bad Rock. So
Okay.
Bart Sears
Yeah, look
only
at
did the
that.
first two issues. I guess Greg Capullo did the third. I wonder what happened there, but
It's not bad either. Like price wise, like they're all in my comics shop for like around $4.
yeah, I would Bart Sears is actually coming to Colorado Springs Convention. If I was to go, I wouldn't mind getting a Violator signed by him.
Yeah, that would be a
Yeah.
neat one to pull out.
Because
Issue one, it says
he does
that
issue one cover.
Violator's brothers come to Earth to kill him. I didn't know he had brothers. Vacillator, Vindicator, Vandalizer, and
Yeah.
Vaporizer. That's funny.
Four V's.
Yeah, the V brothers.
That's right.
Interesting.
So, my last book that I'm going to cover is Lady Death. So, I picked up these fairly recently, like a couple weeks ago, because somebody had like a box of Lady Death or Chaos comics, and you don't see Chaos comics too much in the wild anymore. And this is another company that I'm trying to complete. And this is by Brian Polito with art by Stephen Hughes. And then later issues feature other writers like David Quinn and a couple other assists on story. But this is the Wicked Ways. This is a four issue arc. Maybe it's longer, but it's a four issue arc with Stephen Hughes drawing, and then I think it switches to who does it switch to? Mike Diodato, I think so, in issue five. And I don't have issue five, so I read the first four. The scene opens up as Lucifer has lost control of hell, and he's missing, and he's gone. So there's these demons that are trying to take his castle, and there's these demons, they don't name them, but they look like sort of like DC's Dominators in terms of the forehead, and they're making their way through to the castle, and they seize the castle, and they imprison these two wolves. Well, those two wolves are Lady Death's wolves. And Lady Death shows up with her sword and annihilates this guy, and then takes control of the castle and then frees her wolves. And then she's off to fight another demon because hell is in chaos right now. Everybody's trying to get control of hell. And you see this in Spawn as well as The Demon. If you ever read the Demon comics by Alan Grant, there's all these various wars that are happening in hell. And that's what's happening in Lady Death right now. And this other guy's called Warrung. And he is trying to win favor with this other demon called Volbogliok. It's a strange spelling. It's Volbogliagh. I'll just call it Volbogliok. And he is destroying a bunch of stuff when Lady Death shows up. And he was actually taking a crate with him to give as a treasure to Volbogliok. And it is Lady Death's horse. So she has a horse called Visago. And she kills this guy. She drops like these huge rocks on most of these creatures and then kills the one guy and then frees the horse. So now she has her wolves and the horse in place, and she's going after Volbogliok, and he's like a strange looking demon. Wouldn't you say so, Barb? He looks like that Muppet. You know that weird Muppet? What's that Muppet's name? Mr. Evil. I thought his name was Evil. Deadly. Okay, I knew it was a one word. He looks like Deadly, but he's large. And he's got a huge bush where his balls would be. All right. It's just a ball of hair. And he carries a huge whip. And Lady Death comes to kill him, and she beheads him and then carries around his head. And then later on, you see Cremator, and Cremator was loyal to the Lady Demon, who looks like Lady Death. But what we learned is from the previous series, like, Lady Death was like separated in two, and there's Lady Death and there's Lady Demon, and that's why they look alike. Well, Lady Demon's looking to like merge herself again with Lady Death, and Cremator is loyal to Lady Demon, who's looks like Lady Death, but she has horns and she's red instead of white. And that leads us to issue two, which is Lady, she's on, the cremator finally says he's going to work along with Lady Death to take over hell. He hesitantly does, but she does so with caution because she doesn't know if she can trust him. Meanwhile, Lady Death is Lady Demon is at the castle, and then Lucifer's first wife comes to life again. And her name is Leviatha. And she's seeking vengeance on Lady Death. So they go, Lady Death then tracks down the son of Lucifer and gets there and then battles the son of Lucifer and also Lady Demon. And Lady Demon's sole purpose is to try to merge with her. At the end of issue two, you kind of see their bodies like they're joining at the waist, and Lady Death is trying to fight off the merge. But it looks like she's fighting for the son of Lucifer. So it gets even more complicated. So you get into issue three. And then that, cremator's battling, and they do separate. And then she battles the son of Lucifer and beheads him. So the son of Lucifer was supposed to take over. He was actually fighting Volbaglia for ownership of hell. And when Volbaglia died, the son of Lucifer was in charge of hell. But now that the son of Lucifer is dead, then Lady Death is sort of like the owner of hell. Except there's like a council of demons that is plotting to take out Lady Death. So that's how that issue sort of sums up. And then she runs into the council of demons and then does battle with her and Leviathan. And that sort of goes to issue 4, where I can't remember how that one ended. Let me see. They have this ultimate battle. Lady Demon is still there in the background, but she has the battle with Leviathan and Cremator, because Cremator's still working with her. And then there's just like a side story arc. There's this woman that I guess she killed a busload of children accidentally. She might have been drunk. Lady Demon needs a soul, and she can't merge with Lady Death, so she takes this woman that went to hell for killing this busload of children, and she merges with her body, so there's that arc going on. And then she turns Leviathan. Turns back Lady Death into her original form of hope. So she's now human, and I don't know how that's gonna end, but that's how it ends. And some of the books that came out at the times, because Chaos was blowing up in terms of popularity, was they had the Lady Death ongoing. They had Ernie, Evil Ernie the Destroyer, which was a 9-issue arc. They had the Omen and Dead King. And they had a Metallica comic book. So there was a lot happening. And then Evil Ernie and Purgatory were going to get ongoing series. So it was kind of a lively time. And one of the things, like Rob Liefeld lost the rights to Youngblood and almost like 50% of his properties when he asked for funding from Awesome, when Awesome Comics came in, or maybe it was Arcade, one of the two. He lost rights to an investor, so the investor got 50% and then he got 50%, and the investor sold his rights to this guy called Rev, who now owns the Elementals and Youngblood and several of the Youngblood characters. So Brian Polito also lost his company. So if you look at what's being published by Dynamite, you see like Lady Demon and Evil Ernie, and you'll see Chastity and some of the other characters, Purgatory, a lot of other characters that Chaos Comics used to own. He went bankrupt and lost all the characters with the exception of Lady Death. He took Lady Death over to CrossGen at one point, and CrossGen was publishing Lady Death for a while, and then it landed up at his new home, which he funds mostly, I think, through Kickstarter, but also offers them through previews through a company called Coffin Comics. So he still has the rights to Lady Death, but lost all his other creations because of, I guess, he tried to expand faster than he should have.
Yeah, it's
And
crazy some
the
of the
market
business stuff that
crashed.
happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought something like that must have happened because I was looking at Wikipedia while you were talking, and I was and looking at like comics that they've Lady Death comics that they've done, and was talking about how the comic Coffin Comics stuff is like disconnect where she's like disconnected from any kind of KS Comics universe.
Yeah, that's because Dynamite has the rights now. So Dynamite likes to use, they like to play in the public domain, and they like to acquire things that are cheap. And I guess they got Chaos Comics on the cheap end, and they publish them fairly regularly right now. They have them in crossovers a lot, and now they have an Evil Ernie ongoing. And Evil Ernie first appeared before Chaos Comics in Eternity Comics, and that book is quite expensive. So Lady Death's first appearance, she's the creator of Evil Ernie, and that, so she started Evil Ernie, and he's kind of what started. Evil Ernie looks a lot like that Eddie from Iron Maiden, and I think that is even inspired by that character. If you ever see Brian Polito, he looks like a rock star. Like, he's always wearing black and chains, and at a convention, I met him once or twice. I signed up for, like, there was I don't remember which convention. It was either Baltimore or Heroes Con. They had a ticket giveaway where you'd win an original piece of art, and it was huge. If you put in $5, I didn't win, but it was a big piece of art of Lady Death. It was pretty cool. But yeah, I've dipped my toe in Chaos Comics. Like, I have a couple of the mini series and a couple of Evil Ernie, and I own all the Dynamite stuff, but now I'm trying to get the original material, and it should be easy, with the exception of that first Eternity Evil Ernie. You know, that's like a grand. That's like a really expensive comic.
Yeah, so there's a picture of Brian Polito on his Wikipedia page from like
Yeah.
2017. He definitely looks like he's like a guy that was, like in a metal band
Yeah, he looks
that's
like he's a rock star, and
reuniting.
most of his books deal with heaven and hell, mostly hell, so you know where he's coming from. But
Yeah, he's done like
it's a
some.
pretty cool story. It really is. And the art, I think Steven Yeun became popular later on, but these ones are really, really good art for an ongoing. He does a lot of different demon depictions.
Cool.
So yeah, that's what I read. I decided to read all these, and I bought several Chastity and Purgatory comics as well, just this past week and the week before last. So and I have a bunch of them in my queue for my comic shop to get, because I always see ads for, as you read these, you see ads for other stuff that look interesting.
It's a domino effect.
Yeah.
Well, I had one more thing.
Okay.
Just as kind of, I thought as like a palate cleanser after Spawn,
Well, dark stuff. It seems
Dark
like
Stuff. Yeah.
everything we talked about was fairly dark.
Yeah. I read another one of these Betty and Veronica's. This one's. Looks like it's from like around 1978. It's issue 265, and the cover is the Miss Riverdale beauty contest, and Betty and Veronica are in like one piece bathing suits, and Veronica is saying to a really hippie looking press agent, "Actually, I'm quite modest. I don't think I'm nearly as beautiful as I really am." So the first story is called Cheer Chore, and just like Rab is today. It starts out with Betty doing a flip on her trampoline, and it's this is all about there's they're doing Riverdale High is doing cheerleader squad tryouts, and Betty's practicing, and then they notice that Marcello, the new exchange student from Italy, is about to walk by, and Silveronica runs up. He says, "Ah, Signora Veronica," and he's gonna be he's going to buy tickets for the track meet, and he says that what the it sounds like the reason he's going is for the cheerleaders. He says, particularly those, "I love your American sports, particularly those cute bellissima cheerleaders. Excuso, I don't want to be late." So that piques Veronica's interest in trying out for the squad. She goes in and tells the captain that she comments on the old outfits that they're still wearing, and the captain says because the school ran out of budget, and so Veronica just happens to mention that if that her dad said that he'd if she was a cheerleader, he'd buy new outfits for the whole squad, and then she goes and tells another cheerleader and mentions that if she ends up on the squad, she'll her dad's gonna treat everyone to a rock concert on Saturday, and when it comes to the actual tryouts, Betty does a fantastic jump flip off of the trampoline. But when it comes time to pick the new addition, of course they pick Veronica because of all the promises that she's made. So a week later, she's actually in cheerleading at a game, and she sees Marcello at in the crowd, and he says hi to her, and she's like, "Yeah, see anything new?" And she's priming her hair and stuff, and he says, "Yes, yeah, something fantastical. Never in my life have I seen such beauty and grace. You must introduce me to that bellissima blonde." And so, of course, he's pointing at Betty. Betty's not on the squad, of course, but the coach of the track team saw her doing those flips, and so he recruited her for the for the track team to jump hurdles. It's Betty that's captured Marcello's heart, of course, and so Veronica decides that she's not a very good cheerleader because she cheered the wrong team into victory. So then there's a story called Mix and Match, and this is pretty much it's just Veronica's pool has like it's just a ton of I guess it's like autumn or something. There's a bunch of leaves in the pool, and Betty's about to go get the skimmer, and Reggie and Archie come by, and they've got a Archie's got a rolled up fishing net on his shoulder because they're gonna go fishing, and they're like, "Oh, we can spread out this net and drag it across the pool between the two of us, and we'll grab every leaf at once." So they're like, "Okay." So then they do that, and it works well, and then they go to flip the net and just shoot all the leaves over this hedge, and it all lands on top of Mr. Lodge, Veronica's father. So they're like, "Oh, we got to get out of here," and they're still running with the net, and so they catch the lodge is butler in the net and knock him over and knock him into the pool. So like, well, there's no way we can go back to Veronica's place, so they're off sulking somewhere, and Veronica and Betty go look for him. And they're like, "Well, we messed up our net, or they had to leave it behind, and Mr. Lodge confiscated it, so they can't go fishing anymore. So they're just like, well, what are we gonna do? Like, we're bored, but our plans are ruined and stuff. And so they're like, well, remember we used to do those like fights with water, like water fights and stuff. And they like so they go and get hoses, and Archie and Reggie are discussing like, are we gonna do boys versus girls, or are we gonna split like two teams, boy and girl on each team? And Reggie says he wants Veronica on his team, and he's not looking where he's going, and he catches his hose on a fire hydrant, and it like ricochets him back into Archie's stomach, and they both get knocked out, and Betty and Veronica are like, you know what? Let's just go play checkers. And they're like, we need to find some new boyfriends. And then there's a story called Dollhouse Blues, where Veronica sees what she thinks is Betty playing with a dollhouse in her garage, and she's like, I'm not even gonna like tell her, say hi or tell her I see her, because I don't want to embarrass her playing with dolls at her age. So she just goes on to the malt shop and sees Archie there, and mentions that there's a concert coming up, and he's like, yeah, I'd like to go, but I don't have any money. So she's disappointed. He's like, wait, just give me till tomorrow, and I'll find a way to take you. So he calls her up the next morning and says he found a job, and that he's helping to make furniture in the afternoons and evenings. And he, but he can get an advance on his pay to take her to the concert. But the only problem is, his boss would like to come to the concert as well. And so she says, the more the merrier. Well, when he hangs up, we see that he's in the garage with Betty, and that there's a sign on the wall that says Betty's Dollhouse Furniture Company. So he is making furniture, but he's making dollhouse furniture for Betty. And we know that this is not going to turn out well, and she discovers what's really going on, and doesn't want to go to the concert after all, doesn't want to see Betty's doll furniture. And she goes home and finds out that her father is making his company is actually making dollhouse furniture as well, and she goes off screaming. There's a letter page. A guy writes in, and he says he's got two problems. His one problem is that he's got two girls who are always asking him which one he likes better, and he likes them both equally, and now they're both pressing him to go steady with one of them, and what should he do? And then his other problem is going out with another girl on dates, and he really likes her, but her parents only allow her to see him once a week and on weekends. I'm like, wow, this guy's got a lot of girlfriends.
He's like Archie.
He's popular with the ladies. It's like, he's like, I better write into Betty and Veronica because they know the situation.
What was
And
their
they tell him,
reply?
in the first case, to tell the girls that he likes them both and he doesn't intend to go steady yet. And that with the other girl, once a week on school nights and weekends seems reasonable. Don't knock it. Some girls are not allowed out on a school night at all. So I guess they're
As they
tell them
continue
just,
your pursuits.
yeah, exactly. Don't tie yourself down yet, young man. And then the final story is called Heart Art, and this is one of those ones for me, it doesn't age very well, and it kind of feels a little mean-spirited, because it concerns Big Ethel. She's not as traditionally pretty as Betty and Veronica are, you could say, and it's all about how they see her. She's Big Ethel. She's the one that's normally always going after Jughead. She's kind of like the female equivalent of Jughead, and they see her roller skating with this guy that they think is handsome, and they're like, you know, Veronica's the mean one. She's like, there's no way he possibly likes her. And meanwhile, Betty wants to believe the best of people, and she says she's just happy that she's found a boyfriend, and that and instead of chasing Drughead around. And you know, Veronica's like, he's got to be desperate, and we let's go put him out of his misery for and rescue him. And Betty thinks that's mean, and Veronica says, well, she's gonna lose him to somebody eventually, so why not lose him to her friends? Total great logic there. So she just goes out and skates. She doesn't do anything. She's like, he'll be over to talk to me in like 10 seconds. But of course, he pays no attention to her, and she can only conclude that he's nearsighted and just isn't wearing glasses. So she's like, okay, I'm actually going to go and introduce myself. And he pays no attention to her, just completely ignores her, and says, let's head to the movies to Ethel. Betty's still happy for her, but now it's a competition to Veronica. She's not going to, what she sees, lose out to Ethel. So they go to the movie theater, and she finally gets the guy's attention. And he says, oh, you're Ethel's friend. And then he excuses himself to bring bring popcorn to her. And Veronica's upset that he didn't pay any attention to the outfits that she and Betty are wearing. And so Veronica's worried that they're losing their touch, and Betty just can conclude that he has a deep emotional rapport with Ethel. Now, if Betty were right, this wouldn't be too bad, but we then go to the Riverdale Acting School, and it turns out that this fellow that she's with is named Desmond, and he's doing an experiment. He's basically just trying to improve his acting ability. So if he treats a plain girl like a beauty queen, you know, he'll become a better actor. And he comes running in and says that thanks to the dating that he's been doing, he's got a lead part in a new play. And the other guys in the acting school think, oh, maybe there's something to his theory. So Ethel, you know, later on, Veronica and Betty see Ethel at the malt shop, and she's alone. And they ask her where her boyfriend is, and she says he's at acting school, and Veronica whispers to Betty, I see he's already standing her up. And then she spots a bunch of handsome guys coming in, and they walk in, and they're like, she's fantastic. She's fabulous. And Veronica thinks they're headed her way, and they run past them and all surround Ethel and ask her out. And we know it's the guys from the acting school, and they're just doing what the other guy did. So, yeah. The last page is a one of those Hostess fruit pie ads. And it's Josie and the Pussycats, and it's a girls versus boys soccer match, and the girls are winning 30-6. The guys are not happy. The girls win, but Josie's realizes that, you know, she's lost any chances with this guy Alan on the boys soccer team, and so she goes and gives him some Hostess fruit pies, and that's enough to make up with him and soothe his pride over losing to the girls. So that's the key there. If you have a similar problem, go get some Hostess fruit pies.
If you're losing to the girls.
If you're beating if you wound your guy's pride by beating him at soccer or some other competition, and he don't want doesn't want to talk to you anymore, go get some fruit pies and make and that'll make it up to him.
I wish they sold those at, still. I don't see those Hostess pies anymore.
Yeah, you're right. I don't. Do they still make
What
them?
brand do we get? Tasty Cakes? They still have Tasty Cakes pies, but I haven't seen a Hostess pie in a long time. I don't know. I haven't seen them. I've seen all the Hostess cupcakes and Twinkies and all that stuff, but I haven't seen a pie.
Yeah, I just asked the internet, and it appears they still do sell them, but people don't find them. They're not in the old packaging. They're like in little boxes, and people say they don't. They're not the same. But
Packages everything.
it was, yeah, those old school packages. That's it's not going to be the
The
same.
Tasty Cakes package is like the old school Hostess package.
Are they? Yeah, I do see Tasty Cakes around. Those are really big also in like Pennsylvania.
Those are good. Barb likes the lemon pie and I get the apple. All
Well,
right.
how are things
What?
going with the other in general?
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
I'm probably going to New Mexico next week
Well,
to
okay.
visit family again. If weather permits, like today it's snowing, but
Oh,
we'll
is
see
it?
it. Yeah.
It's like 60 degrees here, but we've got a high wind warning. It's really whipping out there. But we cracked some windows just to get some fresh air in the house.
Yeah. And how have you been? What have you been up to? You haven't
I've been doing
recorded in
pretty
a
good.
while.
Yeah, not been up to a whole lot, just normal. I mean, it's been winter weather mostly. We're starting to get like March and April, our temperature just goes all up and down like before it really kind of sticks to being warmer.
Same here. That's what we
Yeah,
get. We
so
get some 60 together days, and then it's down to 10.
yeah, we might not even fluctuate that much because I know Colorado weather with those mountains can be pretty crazy, but we're gonna like it might get up to actually it's close to 70 right now, and next Sunday they're predicting it's gonna be a high of 32. So, but you know what that's like. But yeah, I've been okay. During like toward the end of the last presidential administration, we'll say. I tried to get in the habit of just like looking at. I wanted to stay up to, what was going on, but I didn't want to like be constantly inundated. And so I try to get in the habit of just checking the news once a day or so. And I, throughout like the pandemic, I mostly stuck to that pretty good. Early on, I kind of wavered on that, but I got back to it. But with like world events this past week or so, that like totally went out of the window for a while. I just got kind of anxious about everything going on in Ukraine,
You
and
and everyone else.
yeah, I was just
So you're not the
looking at the
only
news
one.
constantly. I know, I'm sure I'm not. It's kind of scary, but my personal life is good. Nothing crazy going on there. Pretty uneventful in comparison, but just trying not to let the anxiety go out on stuff I have no control
Control
over.
over,
Yeah. But
Go to a birthday party in a bouncy house. Rob sent us a video of
yeah,
something,
did you
but I
see
couldn't
that
see
video?
it.
Oh, you couldn't? It's his son Zach comes flying out on some kind of like aerial contraption. It's pretty crazy looking. That looks like a pretty fun place for kids, for sure. It's not all trampolines, it's also aerial adventures. He looks pretty excited.
Where's when Rob does it? That's what I want to see.
Exactly. Yeah, you should tell him that. What's the next video I want?
When's your turn?
Yeah.
All right, well, I think we could wrap this one up. And you've been listening to, maybe you've been listening to Geek Brunch Retrocast, if you can get a hold of it.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can find a way to make it work. We're still trying. I'm still trying with Derek to figure out what's going on, but haven't had too much luck. So one way to do it, in case you can listen to it in Spotify and you want it in the Apple Podcast, you go to the podcast app and you just go to the manual URL entry. It has like three dashes on your phone, like on the top, and you could say enter a manual URL. And if you type http colon slash slash www dot geekbrunchpodcast.com slash feed FEED, you can subscribe that way and you will get the updates. I've tried it on my phone. So that's a workaround in Spotify or any of the other feed catchers. You mentioned Overcast. That seems to be working. Don't know what's going on with Apple. Maybe they don't like me, but we'll try to get that resolved. So we're at geekbrunchpodcast.com. Click the like button on Facebook, and you can reach Chris at MythMaking ETC. What was the name of you and Rob's podcast before you stopped? I was trying to think of it the other day because I was talking about podcasts because a question came up on Mike M's Weekly Reads, but I couldn't remember what that was called.
Yeah, we only did, I think, like three episodes, but it was
I think it was more than that. I thought it was at least
no.
half a dozen.
Well, it was the Comic Book Booster Club. That was the
Okay.
name of it.
I thought there was something else you guys did. I can't remember.
Maybe I blacked it out. You'll have to ask
Because
Rob about
you
it.
guys did a podcast before he came full time onto here, right?
Yeah, that was that though.
Yeah.
That was kind of why I
You
was like,
lost an episode and I think it discouraged you, or you recorded and lost an episode or something
yeah,
happened.
that was partially it, and just keeping up with it was gonna. It was mostly about newer stuff and.
You
For
were
me, keeping
losing
up with that,
interest.
yeah, my or fluctuating enough, like I'd feel like doing it part of the year and not the rest. And
Yeah.
we were doing it on Friday nights, and sometimes like feeling awake enough to do that and stuff. But
It's tough, especially the older I get. That's why I like my podcast, 'cause they're fairly flexible. Retro is 10 years. That's a lot of material before
yeah.
10 years, and then Geek Brunch is anything. So the only one that's sort of constrained is DC Spotlight, but it's newer and older DC comics, so there's still a lot to do. And I like, just my nature is, I'm such a mood reader that I need to switch. Like, I can't just stay on something. Like, you were doing the Flash Wally podcast, and you could stay focused on something for a while if you ch choose to do so, and I can't do that. I just can't.
Yeah, well,
I
you
need
know
to
that
mix
though,
it
and it,
up. Yeah.
yeah, it gives you the longevity though,
Yeah. All
because
right.
it did get to a point where I was like, okay, I finished, I got it up to the point where, he started as he became the new Flash, and I was like, okay, that's a good stopping point,
Yeah.
because it does get to a point, it's like tough to keep going by yourself, especially,
Yeah.
but.
All right, I'm at MythMaking ETC. That's Chris. And Rob is at Rob Krieger, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. That's the best way to get a hold of me. And we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks, hopefully.
Right, sir. You
You
take
take
care of
care
yourself.
and try not to get
Okay.
too anxious like the rest of us. I was even showing Barb a book at Barnes and Noble. There were books on sale. You know how if you go into Barnes and Noble, they have like, here's the books that are going on sale. And I
Yeah.
was like holding up a book, and it was like methods for coping with anxiety.
Yeah.
And I held it up and I said, I really need this right now.
Yeah.
And I actually read a few pages and I agree with everything they said, but it's not like something that you can control. That's the problem. You can try to do various things to be less anxious and do stuff, like not procrastinate on things and just do it and try to keep your mind busy, but sometimes it's just tough. Sometimes anxiety attacks you at times when you're just trying to rest the mind, like you're fast asleep and then boom. Sometimes I don't know, I try mechanisms, but I have a rough time dealing with it sometimes.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, you have a good week, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks, hopefully.
All right, you too.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.